Welcome to our video podcast, The Wingman Show. Enjoy. We're floating like butterflies and stinging like bees. Rumble, you badass jet pilots, rumble. My name is Drew Brown. Welcome to the Wingman Show. We want to inspire, entertain, and hopefully we'll all learn something so we can be better people. But I'd like to introduce to you my main man, my wingman, who always has my back, Dr. Paul Thompson. What's up, brother Paul?
Good morning, Mr. Drew. Ladies and gentlemen, you just heard from Mr. Drew Brown, Dark Gable of the American Dream. He's the man, the myth, the legend, the pilot's pilot, the role model's role model, and most importantly, his royal fullness. I'm doing great on this beautiful sunny day. How are you?
I'm great, man. All right. Paul, I want to talk about two things, and I want to talk about them off the cuff. We haven't talked about them before. I saw a million dollar houses. Huh?
Not $1 million houses?
No, it's not about $1 million houses. I want to talk to you about something that I saw this morning. You know, I'm going to stop watching the news because it's really starting to depress me. But what I saw this morning were down at the border, you know, the wall that they have that Trump wants to build, just the wall, the real big wall.
Right.
They had these men holding toddlers. They said were 5 and 3 years old. And dropped them 12 feet down by themselves over the wall so they could be on the other side. Then they went over the wall and ran for freedom. So they just dropped a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old over the wall. Or maybe 5 and 7. Truly doesn't matter. Can you tell me, number one, that's so weird. And these men get paid for that, doing that. What do we do with those two kids? Tell me, in America, what do we do with these two kids? Because all I hear is complaints and reasons. Don't let them in. Do let them in. This side, that side, this side. Hold them in. What kind of solutions could we have with that? But what do you do with those two kids? How disgusting is that? They're miles from getting rescued. They want to get caught, is what they're trying to do. So the Border Patrol brings them into custody.
That's a rough situation. Now, you said they dropped them. What, they just drop them? Kids start running. Where do they run? Where do they go?
No, the end of the video, it was nighttime video, you know, like the Marines have that night vision. So it was night vision video of men holding them over the wall. I'm sure you could YouTube it anytime because this was national news and you'll get the ages right. They held them over the wall and actually dropped them. And the people said 12 to 14 feet. I don't know. That's what they said. But you could see them, and you could see it was two kids. And these men, they're the ones who smuggle in and out, these kids. So the big question is not how horrific that is, but what do you do with those two children in America today, 2021? Forget the past, forget the future. What are we going to do with these two kids?
That's a tough sell. Try to reunite them with relatives. They have them. What if they don't have? How do you find them? Do they speak English? Or they become
100% not. Katrina said they might have a note on their chest, which I bet they do. A note pinned to their chest. But is it our responsibility, or should we just, you know, clean them up and then show them the door? What do we do to Mexico about allowing that border to be crossed and all these people standing there at their border? How about the border that's allowing from Central America into Mexico, which is totally non-secure? They say that's the easiest one to get through.
Right. Well, it's you know, not to delay answering your question, but it goes deeper than that. You know, you got folks coming from West Africa to South America to get a plane ticket somehow, and they make their way up. And they're trying to get through Mexico, too. Some are from Cameroon and Ghana, believe it or not.
I got to just say, I must say this because I know the kind of person I am. I know the kind of person you are. And if we had families from any of those countries and we felt that we couldn't protect our family, we would do the same thing. I know I would. I can speak for myself. But I would do anything to make sure my family had freedom and my kids had the ability to succeed.
I'm getting the impression they're fleeing from like almost certain death.
Yes, gangs and drugs.
Gangs, drugs.
It's not because they want beachfront property. I believe we have to take care of these children. I cannot be a country. The only other thing you could do is put them on the other side of the wall. There's either or. Either we put them in camps and do whatever they're doing, which is kind of starting to get horrific. And nobody has answers. There has to be answers to this. But they're so desperate that they're dropping their kids over the wall. Once again, if you and I were that desperate of our children, maybe the drug dealers are after us for some stupid reason and after our kids. I drop my kids over the wall too. I'm telling you, you have to actually put yourself in some of these people's shoes. They're not just animals. They're human beings. Part of the Homo sapiens, one race of people. And I'm not preaching. I'm just saying for real, there are two children out there.
Now, how do you stop it? Question is, why are these places so unstable, so suddenly unstable that everybody's just doing that?
You want to hear the government's answer? Because we're not sending enough money there and they're destabilized. And they're run by banana republics. Could you imagine that? A country run by a banana republic that might actually, you know, even invade the capital, do something like that. Their politicians were corrupt. Can you imagine a country like that? Do you know America used to say that all the time? All the time. If this was in Africa, oh my God. Could you imagine what we would condemn them? How we would condemn those people if they acted like we're acting now? Or their politics were like it is now. You realize these people are not voting for America or right or wrong anymore. They're voting along party lines, period, end of story. America can't continue to live like this. I want to get back to the kids because I really need to, I want to take care of them. I want to do the best I can for them, but I also want to stop it. And I want to put some pressure on Mexico because they're on Mexican territory in order to get to us. So maybe if you provided Mexico with even more, or we put our troops in Mexico so they don't get to the wall, so they don't get that far.
Good luck.
But there's thousands of kids right now in facilities that are caged. For real.
Because I was reading a story about some immigrants from Cameroon, and they were trying to make it to the U.S., and they made it as far as Tijuana, which is on the other side of San Diego. It's like, you know, some people are very resourceful when they have to be. Somehow got an airplane ticket to go somewhere in South America and just doing the rest of it by bus and foot. And she was in, still can't get past Tijuana into San Diego. Been trying like for 5 months. That's one thing we don't realize, that a lot of folks are really resourceful in this world, really resourceful. A lot of them drown at sea, particularly crossing the Mediterranean in a life raft or something that more rinky dink than what you get at Dick's Sporting Goods and on sale.
100%.
And drowning by the hundreds and by the thousands. Is there any part of the world that's not unstable right now?
We used to say us.
Yeah, right.
So that's out the window.
You think that you have a mass shooting?
I know one that's pretty cool, no kidding. And I'm an American and I love America, so I'm not talking bad about America, but we went and visited New Zealand and I really love New Zealand and I love New Zealanders.
Okay. It was great. But didn't they have a mass
murder?
Yeah.
They had a mass shooting and they banned guns. Boop, done. Next.
Yeah, but you still have the problem. That's not gonna be enough. You have a mass shooting in America, I think every day. I think a mass shooting is anything more than four people. There was
four
yesterday.
Four this morning in Los Angeles.
Okay, the St. Valentine's Day massacre. I think that was just half a dozen people killed in Chicago.
Really? I thought there was more. In my mind, it looked like so much more. So many.
Yeah, like you say, 1,000. No, it's more like about it's like 5, 6, 7 guys, mobsters that got killed.
Really?
And here we have this all that. You've got a lot of people here with a lot of hangups. This is pre-COVID. Pre-COVID, they're crazy. Post-COVID, it's out the top of the chain, as you would say.
We can go back to telling you, we can go back to your solution, not your solution, but your answer in one of the earlier episodes. And that's mental illness is really the problem. You're seeing, you know, I always used to say there's 1 out of 100,000 crazy people. So if you're in New York, that means there's 7 or 8 right there on the street. So the further out you get in Iowa, there's one and he's in the town and everybody knows him because there's only 6,000 people. So there actually might not even be one there.
Right.
But that's what we're having a problem with. These are not. Did you see the guy who beat the Chinese woman? You know what they found out about him today?
Yes. He killed his mother with a knife. He's out on parole for murder. Not a typical guy. Not a typical person. Not even a typical criminal. That was bad luck for her and anybody who crossed him, actually. You know,
how did he get out and innocent people don't?
I don't know. So he killed his mother. He's walking around. Looked like he was fairly well dressed.
He did time. I think.
Okay, time. Okay. He killed his mother. He did some time. He's walking on the street. He does something. But there are people in prison now for marijuana that's legal in a bunch of places, and folks are making big money off. How does that happen?
You know, back home, New York just went legal.
Yes, yesterday.
Yes. They're going to be busting them up in New York. The Big Apple going to have a big smoke ring around it. Yeah. You know New York can do it. They're going to go crazy with these dispensaries and everything else.
Yeah, well, I think what you're gonna have more of a split in society. You're gonna have people who are either really doped up or not doped up at all.
Well, this medical use for marijuana is for real, because you'd rather have them doped up on medical marijuana than doped up on opioids, because that will take away from the economy. Marijuana, they'll buy more Cheetos, so that is. It's like a big difference between, you know, stopping marijuana, the liquor industry. They don't want an alternative. And you tell me, you think people in bank robbers, let's take it, or people do real bad things. You think alcohol's involved or marijuana? In most of the violent crimes in this country. You think it's alcohol, hard drugs, or do you think any of it is just pure marijuana?
I think it's probably all three, but there's a lot of folks who are crazy.
I heard that marijuana, just what I heard marijuana just makes you want to chill out, eat munchies, and laugh. That's what I heard. So I don't think you get violent. That's what I heard.
So you're going to say society's the solution to everyone's problem is just to have them doped up?
What the hell? Where did that come from? Of course I didn't say that. I was just comparing that to alcohol, how prevalent alcohol is, how you could just, martinis are fine. Why can't James Bond be blowing a blunt? Why can't he be doing that?
I'm trying to visualize Sean Connery doing that. That's interesting. And the Aston Martin. I think the original one was better.
But, oh, my God. All right, so I think my solution for the kids, where I'll take care of them. I guess we'll find a way. We'll find a way. Every morning, my little routine, I make my coffee, and I put my turmeric in it, and I do my little thing. I go to my little prayer corner. Then I start my workout. And every morning I start my workout, I watch MSNBC, Casey Hunt, just to listen. Then I watch Morning Joe because my daughter told me to. Then I watch the Today Show, okay? That's how I'm just listening to it, but that's my little routine. I just figured out something that's going to trip you out because I look forward to these shows just to listen. Since Trump is gone, I could care less about politics because now it's just back to being ugly and stupid.
Right.
And I realized that he was really a reality show, because you never, it was like watching 24. What is our president going to do next? Or our former president?
Right, right, right. What's the next thing?
I've lost all interest because Joe Biden just talks normal, is normal, says normal things. Whether you
standard routine,
don't agree, they're normal.
Right.
They're normal. Things are back to being that I hear that it is exactly along party lines, everything. So we're not going to go forward at all. We deserve the politicians we get. So the only thing I can really do is vote and try not to pay attention to it, because it's now a bummer. Before, it was kind of like a game show, even though
it was fun. Yeah.
The end of it, you know what? The Capitol thing, it was like the end of the season.
The finale. The great
that was deal. The finale. What a freaking season.
Who shot
the Sopranos, the Trumps, you know what I mean? The Wire. Holy cow. Well, Major League Baseball's thinking about canceling the All-Star game in Atlanta.
I've heard that. Of it. Yeah.
Are you freaking kidding?
Canceling other things too, just to show.
Are you freaking kidding? Stopping people from voting because they didn't vote your way?
Yep.
Are you kidding me? So actually, so that's what I'm saying. It's starting to be like, that's real ugly. When Trump did it, it was a joke. I swear.
But these guys are not as much fun. There's no entertainment value, and it's more serious.
No, they're just mean spirited.
Yeah.
When he was mean spirited, it was funny still. I can't explain it. But
it
that's
make
what
you laugh
came up to my mind today. That I'm not interested in politics anymore because it's ugly, it's mean spirited. I don't see any point to it. But when Trump was there, I really got into it.
Yeah, I can see that because he was unpredictable. And what attracted you was the unpredictability. You weren't bored. You were surprised all the time. We got a new surprise. We got a circus. On this side, we got the fat lady singing. This one, I got an elephant. Another guy's doing chainsaws. And there's a bear that's dancing. And then maybe I can interview somebody. And maybe I dance with the bear. Or I tell the bear he's this terrible bear. You're the worst bear I've ever seen. You know, get out of the press conference. You know, I can hit you different ways, as opposed to just a regular church service. It's quiet with an organ going and you're listening for a while. Maybe then you decide to drift off and then it's over and you're gone, as opposed to someone that, you know, you're a Studio 54 in the 70s and it's and the music is going and banging. And
did you go? I was there. My friend used to be a doorman there. I used to hang out.
Yeah, you told me I could never get in. I just heard what it was. I couldn't get in. I was below the riffraff at that time.
You know what I remember about Studio 54 more than anything? I was young. I was 17, 18, whatever I was. But my friend Princey was the doorman there. So obviously I always got in. All the stars were there. But it was $5 a drink. What are they, crazy? I couldn't believe
money.
That more than that was the biggest shock to me, that it was $5. Any drink, a beer, a drink, $5.
Yeah. Like that'd be like $50 today or more.
Correct. Correct. It'd be 50, like 60, you walk in and say the minimum drink is 50. And people go, can I get six? Can I get six over here? And then they had the downstairs, they had the upstairs. There were a lot of stairs in that place.
You know, you hung out with the rich and famous. I was just with some broke folks from Queens. You had the hookup.
And that's why you're smarter than me. So we talked about those two things. So now we came up to the fact in life. This is our ninth show. The ninth fact in life is self-discipline. Commit and get and develop self-discipline. And where I came up with that one, Paul, was every time I had a coach or a gunnery sergeant or somebody making me do stuff, I was in the best shape of my life. Always. When you made me get up, when you made me run, when you made me do things, when you made me practice for 4 hours, I just got better and better and better. It is night and day between doing that, growing up, and going out there and doing it yourself. I went to New Mexico State University. I played Division I football, spring football. I had the best year of my whole life, but I got kicked out of college because of grades. I had a 1.6, which is actually pretty good, saying that I never went to school. And the reason I didn't go to class is because my first class ever had 300 people in it. And we're from New York. What's the first thing you do your whole life when you went to school? You took attendance. So I'm waiting for them to take attendance. And then I'm thinking, it's going to take a long time to do this attendance. So I said, what are you waiting on? He said, attendance? They don't take attendance. They don't care if you're here. I said, get out of here. Watch, get up. Nobody cares. Well, anyway, self-discipline was, I knew I had to go back to college. I wanted to go back to college more than anything. I wanted to play ball. I wanted to go to college. So I had to start really good self-discipline in studying. And I noticed that when I studied, I got good grades. So I had to put a little bit more time in the school part so I can enjoy the fun part. I think it's one of the hardest things to develop. But truly, if you do not work hard for something, if you don't work extra for something, it's not going to be your best. And you should do your best in everything so you don't have any regrets. So self-discipline, Dr. Paul Thompson.
Yeah, you got to do it. Sometimes you can't always get what you want. And you don't need it. Sometimes make that sacrifice in the beginning and reap the rewards in the end. I remember there was a engineering professor, an advisor of mine, good man, passed away just a few years ago. He looked, you know, everybody else aged in 45 years. He aged about like 5 years. He just looked younger than the rest of us. But he died recently. But I remember when people would come to the school, to the engineering school, they'd have a quick orientation, nice orientation. But one point at the end of it, the end of the orientation, they'd bring in like one of the regular school social activity guys or whatever. And he would talk about all the types of things that you could do at the University of Pittsburgh and all the clubs and all the fraternities and the sororities and this group and that group and da, 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 this activity, that activity. It went off like about 50, 20 minutes. And at the end of it, the guy leaves and Dr. Lewis comes up and says, okay, all that stuff you heard, all those activities in this engineering school, you will not have time for any of them. So forget about it. That's not verbatim, but that's basically what it is. And that is true. And then he also went on and said, and I never forgot this, all the parties and things going on, you know, you may miss those, but when you finish, they'll still be there for you. You can go then. That I remembered at 18 years old. I still remember it today. Mm-hmm. And that tends to be true. I never forgot it. He said, it'll be there. Sometimes it seems that way. I got a master's degree while I was still on active duty. I just came back from my first cruise, and I just signed up for a thing. Basically, you could do it at NAS Jax on the Navy base on the weekend. And I committed to a year. That was that year on the beach. So I'm flying and doing everything and but they did it on the weekends, and I worked out the watch schedule. They didn't give me a watch, which was cool. And it was a year program, and it took me 13 months to actually do it because I had to go out to Yuma, drop some bombs and stuff. But the thing was, it's like, you know, why am I doing this? Because it started like Friday night for like about 3 hours. Then it was all day Saturday and most of the day Sunday. Then Monday, I'm back flying. I'm thinking, after a while, I said, boy, this seems like this. Why did I sign up for this? This takes forever. That was a long time ago. Ronald Reagan was the president. It was 13 months. And I did it through the VA, and I think I might have spent $100 for that degree. That's what it cost me. $150 with notebooks and pencils or something like that. And it was really a great, 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 great deal. You just had to sacrifice a little bit. But when you're like 24, 25 years old, that seemed to be a lot.
Okay. Sure.
So again, another time for that time, I didn't go out. I just did my studies, did very, very well. Got five beta something or other, really paying attention. But again, coming off of a cruise on a warship and all the stuff you got to do, I was kind of primed to do it. It wasn't that hard. Plus I'd go home and do different things. But it seemed kind of funny. So I did it, out for a year at sea, and now I'm back. I'm in this academic program. It's going to be like another year. Yeah. But it was actually a pretty good deal. It was actually a great deal.
Paul, that's the reason I'm able to call you Dr. Paul Thompson, because of what you did in your past.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you think? Because you've had, I'd be honest with you, I have self-discipline too, but that's because I have diabetes and I don't want them to cut my foot off. That's because I have a bad back and it hurts when you're fat. I'm just telling you why I have self-discipline now, but there are reasons. Right. You've always had self-discipline, Paul. You've always kept in shape. You've always kind of kept a level of that in your life. I blame it because I was an athlete and I had to do it so much. I didn't like it after a while working out. But what do you think gave you your determination, your self-discipline? When you don't want to keep doing something, why do you keep doing
it? Everybody battles that. It could be chewing gum or doing some other crazy thing. There are all kinds of imbalances. The thing is to try to have as much balance as you can, but it's always like we're kind of on a seesaw, trying to keep it even. And there's so many things that will take us out, maybe just ourselves or some influence or something that looks good. Let's go. Let me just forget this and let's do this for a second. That might be good, sometimes not. But, you know, diet and exercise. And for me, it's a lifestyle. I feel funny if I don't do it. I mean, I take days off now because I need to rest, not just to, you know, break myself down. But I just look, you know, you've got to go for what you think the future will bring to you in a positive way. You just do a little sacrifice on the front end. You can reap great, great rewards. So the purpose of hard work, I think, is not just to work yourself to death, but so that you can kick back maybe a little later in life or a little later on. You could be 25 years old. Kick back maybe for sacrifices you made before and enjoy things a little bit.
You're right. I used to tell kids when I spoke to them, work now or work later, but you're going to work.
You're going to work.
You're going to work.
Yeah.
So guess what? We're up to our wingman part. And today's my story of a wingman. And, you know, it's important to have a wingman. That's why we named it. You know, we need to look out for each other. Everybody watch their six. Watch, you know, what somebody looking out for you. My wingman story is very, very personal now because I have two wingmen that I want to talk about. But one I want to talk about is my son, Dr. Drew Jacques Brown IV. He's my wingman and always has been my wingman. He's a hardcore wingman too. He's the reason that I have changed my lifestyle. He has taught me how to do it. He's changed my diet 4, 5, 6 times. He changes my diet. I become vegan. He starts eating meat again. I don't know what to do. And you know what? Mm-hmm. I listen to him. I'm so blessed. My back hurts. But guess what? My son's a spine surgeon. So I listen to him. But I know whatever he tells me is time, true, and tested. And the way he tells me, I hate to say it, is very motivating, but it's not nice. Everybody has to be motivated in a certain way. And I guess my poster, The 11 Facts in Life, this just happened maybe a year ago or something. I said, Drew, how come you don't put it up? He says, okay, Dad, remember this one, the art of thought, the art of communication, the art of action. Well, when you start working out every day with the art of action, maybe I'll think about putting it up. All right. Okay. That really hit. And I haven't stopped working out since. So that's a wingman. When he's concerned about my health, he's a wingman. When he gives me a checkup, he's rough with me. He's amazing. He's the best kid in the whole world. You too, Taryn, Christine. But yes. Today, little Drew, who's been my little main man, I don't want to start crying on camera because that's not what this show's about today. I don't mind crying, but he's my main man, always has been. And it's not easy being a dad, and especially not easy being a dad to a young man, especially not a young man that, like myself, knows that you have to be better than your parents. You just have to be. You have to have a notch above. That's how life keeps going. You know, make this world better for your children. And so my son has taught me a long time ago, but he continuously amazes me, and I love him so much. And any problems I have with him, I give to Shorty. It's too deep for me to deal with. So that's my wingman, Drew Jacques Brown IV. I love you too, Taryn Christine. I got to keep saying that. Taryn, don't play.
That's good. That's good.
And you've known him such a little boy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just a little boy bouncing around, running around, playing basketball with his friends.
He wound up getting a college scholarship to the University of Texas playing basketball.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Does he keep in touch with his teammates?
Yes. Yes. He still keeps in touch with a lot of them. He keeps in touch with his when he went to medical school.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps
because he went to Tufts.
His best friend here in Atlanta, Dr. Yao Bauchi, who is his best friend, and he's a wrist surgeon, hand and wrist specialist.
Mm-hmm.
So he keeps in touch with his childhood friends or his school friends. Yeah. Okay. Is what I should say.
Where did he go to medical school?
He went to Tufts Medical School up in Boston.
Okay, in Boston. Okay.
Yeah. Very good medical school. I was so proud when he was a doctor, when he became a doctor. I didn't have a doubt in my mind. So quick story. At the graduation, so it's a big graduation. There are a lot of people there, a couple of thousand. And because we were late, we had to be in the back. Doesn't matter. We were kind of far away from the stage. But when that boy got that, when they called Dr. Drew-Jacques Brown, I yelled out as loud, "Bust him, Drew-Jacques! Bust him! That's my boy!" Mm-hmm. So, and everybody looked at me, didn't care at all. But he heard me. And what made me really touch me is later. Well, first of all, so then they all came down in the procession. And we lined up on the side. And the president came first. And when he saw me, and this is how far away he was, he ran over to me and he said, "I wish I had a dad like you." So I'm just proud of Drew. And then he told me later that he told the guy next to him, "That's my dad," when he heard it. All right, we better stop there. I'm having a mini, my daughter would tell me. All right. I didn't forget that. All right, Wingman Show. All right, you know what we're doing? We're floating like butterflies and we're stinging like bees. Rumble, you badass jet pilots, rumble. Paul Thompson, I think you're one of the best things that's ever happened to me. And I love you so much. Thank you for doing the show. We're doing it, man.
Same to you, Mr. Drew. It's definitely a pleasure, an honor and a pleasure.
All right. See you later, everybody.
See you later. More to come.
I forgot to do the ending. We really want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for the time that you've given us, because time is your most precious commodity. It's the only thing that we don't get back. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah.